And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I could say that this week is a week of anticipation. We have trials approaching. We have the impeachment starting in a few days, and then in a few weeks, we have the trial by election or by caucus in Iowa. So, and then, of course, last week we had the debate, kind of a trial, the Democratic Party debate. So I think we could cover all of this. It would be interesting.
Let's give it a shot.
Well, what do you think about the impeachment? I mean, we've always been discussing whether or not this is a good idea. Now we're here. Good idea or a bad idea, it's here. They're doing it. The judge has been sworn in. The jurors have been sworn in, although the majority perjured themselves because the majority already said that they weren't going to do anything but acquit,
right?
Which means that they could hardly be impartial jurors, which is what they took the oath to do. So, you know, that's kind of a bad way to start out, right?
Yeah, yeah. Of course, heretofore, the big debate was whether or not Nancy Pelosi holding off on delivering the impeachment documents was a good thing or a bad thing for the Democrats. And we had this who is really running things. Is it McConnell or is it Pelosi or is it the White House and whatever? Pretty much the White House was out of the loop. They couldn't control this at this stage. What they could control was McConnell,
because he laid down on his back and raised his legs and his arms like a puppy dog and wanted his belly scratched. I'm ready. Right. I'll do what you tell me to do.
Right. We're the independent branch that's going to do whatever the executive branch wants us to do. But
we're the jurors who'll do whatever the defendant tells us to do.
Yeah. On the other hand, and I don't think it was planned, but fortuitously, a lot of things came out while Pelosi was holding the cards and holding off on this. And, of course, this week we had the Parnas interview, which I think in some way made the case for calling witnesses a little bit stronger. We can talk about that, but we still have to, you know, see where this thing is going to go. And it's still kind of amorphous because the rules have to be adopted by the Senate, and what the exact role of the Chief Justice is or what he intends to do as he presides over this is going to be important. Are there going to be any rulings or evidentiary rulings or rulings on if witnesses are called, what they will or will not be able to do?
Doesn't the Senate reserve for itself the right to overturn any ruling by the justice, by Justice Roberts?
Well, that would be in the rules that the Senate makes for the trial, because there's the Constitution makes no provisions for what a trial would be like. They just say trial.
Right.
It just says trial. Right. So they'd have to go on previous precedent, but that never, you know, what we've learned anything from the Mitch McConnell days is that precedent doesn't mean anything to him.
Right.
It's whatever he can get away with at the moment.
Right. 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 And he can get away with a lot because he's got 2/3 majority there.
Well, as long as he's got 50 some votes.
Right.
Now, on certain areas, those votes are nobody knows for sure. But we've heard this time and time again. Well, there's some of these quote unquote moderate Republicans who might break ranks, and then they never do.
What we're talking about here, what they're talking about here, is almost ridiculous. They're arguing about whether there should be witnesses at a trial.
Right.
How do you have a trial without witnesses? Have you ever heard of it? You're a lawyer. You go to court. Can you have such a thing?
Well, you could submit it on the record. You get someone pleads no contest, which a lot of people think is a plea of guilt, and it isn't. What you can actually be acquitted on a plea of no contest. What it says is, I'm not going to contest the facts as are before the court, and whatever the court determines. And sometimes, and I've heard of it happening, the court says, these facts don't rise to the level of criminality.
Ah, so there we have a situation where the Parnes documents and the Parnes testimony of this last week buttresses everything and worse that all the diplomats said a month ago to the and 2 months ago to the House committee. Not only was there no contradiction between what the diplomats said to the House committee, he went further in pinpointing what they did. He made the Parnes made the point that even before the president, the newly elected president of the Ukraine, was inaugurated, he, Parnes, met with him and told him, if you don't come across with an investigation of Trump's chief political enemy, forget about any aid whatsoever, military or civilian. He said that to him.
Well, it went further in that regard. Number one, it puts Rudy Giuliani right in the middle as the catalyst, because he was carrying a letter from Rudy Giuliani telling him that he had power, and Giuliani's letter self-exposes himself as that he's the personal, that Giuliani was the personal emissary of the president, although the phone call from Trump itself, we don't have the transcript. Remember, Trump keeps saying, read the transcript. Yeah. It's the summary of the transcript. He tells the president of Ukraine to listen to Giuliani. So Giuliani was the guy who got to Parnes, and Parnes was the guy filling this out. But Parnes also puts into this mix of knowing what's happening the vice president, and he puts in Pompeo, and he puts in Bill Barr and Rick Perry. All of these characters are now fully implicated.
They're implicated in knowingly carrying out the pressure on the Ukrainians.
And it was an illegal process, because the GAO came out this week and said withholding of aid was illegal.
That's right.
And that's an independent agency in the government. I'm sure that somebody from the president or vice president is over there now trying to figure out who they can fire or kick out or transfer to Siberia or Alaska or someplace like that that has to do with this report.
But I noticed that although the GAO report came out, and you would have thought that it would be screaming headlines, there were a couple of stories about it, but it wasn't screaming headlines.
Well, that's because the media is more focused on the personalities that are out there, and you have Parnes, who kind of sucked up a lot of the airtime this week. He was on Rachel Maddow, and then he was on Anderson Cooper on that.
But the GAO made the point for the Constitution that if the Congress passes something in terms of policy and the appropriation of money to implement the policy, the executive does not have the right to ignore that and to do something else.
Right. But there was what I want to talk about Firtash in a second. But there was also a court ruling that said that the president could transfer money from the defense budget to building his wall, if you remember.
And
which basically says that the hell with the law, that the president can change it in any way he wants to when he wants to change it. If the thinking behind that ruling stands and then gets applied to what you just talked about, then the GAO report's meaningless, because the fact that it's against the law doesn't mean anything, because the president effectively can take the money no matter what.
Well, that was, again, I hate to say this, the Republicans constantly say it, that was one judge.
Yeah, that was one judge. By the way, I do the one thing that I want to get back to is the other thing that Parnes did is he said that Giuliani and he were being financed by this guy Firtash, who's sitting in Austria, I believe, waiting extradition, and he's linked to the Russian mob, which means he's linked to Putin. And there's your, you know, as all the president's men said, follow the money. There's the money trail.
Yeah.
So we have that. But who knows? Maybe Firtash will find himself in some sort of a trunk and be in Lebanon by next week.
But the point is that there's just a continuing stream of illegality that, you know, that Trump engages in. He boasted that he would do it when he ran, and he said, I could kill somebody and I'd still be elected. I could shoot somebody in broad daylight on Fifth Avenue, I'd still be elected. He pursued illegality every minute of the day, it seems to me, in everything that he's done. The last 2 weeks ago or last week, it came out that that at his direction, Pompeo called the foreign ministers of France, Germany, and Britain and told them if they don't go along with Trump's plan on Iran, Trump will impose tariffs on European cars. European car industry is the most important industry the Europeans have in terms of export. And so they did it. They then went to the UN and triggered some aspect of the treaty, which people at the UN said was a disaster in terms of trying to settle this matter with Iran. Yeah. But, of course, it's not a disaster for Trump because he's looking for war.
Yeah. Well, he is and he isn't. He thinks he can probably bluff them out of war, and I think he's sadly mistaken in that point. But let me just say something else. I mentioned, you know, all the president's men a while ago. You know, Nixon, one of the things that we knew about Nixon is the kind of people he surrounded himself with. Shady characters, people who cut corners, who are mean-spirited, things like that. And
who are racist.
Racist. They can't hold a candle to the people around Trump. I mean, again, what Parnas shows is that it was the shadiest of the shadiest that are around Trump and doing his bidding. And everywhere you go, it's all this cast of characters.
Trump has said he never heard of Parnas. He doesn't know who he is. But, never met him. Yeah. Except we have all these photographs of the two of them playing golf together.
And remember, Trump said he only hires the best people.
Well,
you know, of course, again, you know, just bald-faced lies about what it is. You know, we're talking about breaking the law. We had this week where the Trump administration now wants to legalize bribery.
Right.
There's a law that goes back, 40 years or so, that says that American companies cannot engage in bribery in trying to secure foreign contracts. And Trump's idea is, there's nothing wrong with that. Why should it be illegal?
No, he said it puts American companies at a handicap.
At a disadvantage.
That's the rest of the world's taking advantage of us. We can't bribe.
Now, you notice, of course, who does bribing? Only people with money do bribing.
That's right.
You know, the poor people can't bribe.
Right.
So, again, that's, you know, the average Trump supporter, the guys in the MAGA hats, they're the ones that
the bribes are guarantees that these guys in the MAGA hats are going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why do they need to, you know, the
Because, because a lot of these bribes will put jobs in foreign countries, not here.
Yeah. Well, so it goes. So it goes.
Well, we also had, you know, talk about lies. We found out that the Pentagon lied this week about the Iranian retaliatory strike.
That's right. They said they didn't hurt any Americans.
No injuries.
No injuries. No casualties.
Right.
Now, it is true that the Iranians apparently went out of their way not to have casualties. Their whole point was to show they could land these missiles wherever they wanted to. It was a demonstration of their ability to pinpoint the missiles, so there weren't a lot of casualties, but there were casualties.
Yep, I have a feeling over time we're going to find out how severe these were. These are concussive type of injuries. They're not the kind that cause blood in your... on the outside, but they do brain damage on the inside.
Well, I mean, we could talk all the rest of the show about what the Trump administration did in the last few days. I mean, one of the things they did was on Michelle Obama's birthday, they announced that they were changing the dietary rules for school lunches. She emphasized vegetables. They said pizza and potatoes, fried potatoes, will now count as vegetables so that green vegetables don't have to be served.
Right.
How about that?
It goes back to ketchup is a vegetable, right?
Ketchup is a vegetable, right.
That was the Reagan administration. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And the Ben Carson, the president's only African-American token on the cabinet, head of the housing department, announced that the housing department was going to lessen the rules against discrimination in housing, was going to weaken them. That was also last week.
Well, don't forget, Trump is still hurting from the fact that he and his father were found guilty of discrimination way back in the 70s.
Yeah, twice.
Yeah. But who currently has those kinds of issues? Who? Jared Kushner. Remember down in Maryland?
That's right. Down in Baltimore, where he owns thousands of apartments. Right.
That terrible city.
Yeah.
That no one should be going to, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, terrible in quotes, of course.
Elijah Cummings just represented it, but Kushner owns it.
Yeah. Yeah. Elijah's rolling over in his grave, unfortunately. The poor fellow. Yeah. By the way, let me just get back to, you know, we talk about all the president's men and sleazy characters. They did announce the president's defense team for the impeachment. And once again, it's filled with characters that makes one wonder. But as was noted many times, it's more of a made-for-TV type of presentation than necessarily the substance or whatever, because that's how Trump views America, as a TV show.
Well, I think he's right. I mean, in this respect, I think he's right.
How he got elected.
A, it's how he got elected, and B, that's how he wins the trial. He knows he has the votes in terms of a formal acquittal, but the important thing is to make a good presentation on TV to win public opinion.
Remember, perception is reality.
Yeah.
You know, we have, he picked Alan Dershowitz, who was controversial when he defended O.J. Simpson, but really has run into problems now because of the Jeffrey Epstein case. You know, so we have a president who's
denies vigorously that he ever knew Jeffrey Epstein.
Well,
he knew him, but he didn't know him that way.
Yeah. And then he also has Ken Starr, who was involved in the Jeffrey Epstein defense. But of course, Ken Starr, you know, sort of like Dinesh D'Souza, you know, when he became a college president, ran into problems. He was the president down at Baylor, and there were sexual harassment allegations or sexual impropriety allegations against the football team that were never taken seriously, and he was forced to resign out of that. And then he has Pam Biondi, who looks like a Fox TV hostess.
Didn't she date Trump for a time? Of course, he was married to
I'm not sure, but she was, what was she, the Secretary of State?
She was the Secretary of State, right, exactly.
And she had either resigned that or she lost her reelection bid, I believe, back when they were, you know, counting votes and things like that. Just a team of, dare we say, deplorable all-stars?
No, I don't think you can say deplorable. It's not a word that will work anymore, but it's... But these are the kinds of people who the Gottis of the world always choose. They have a certain veneer of competence, but they have a deep underlaying of sleaze, because otherwise they wouldn't work for these guys. After all, you're a lawyer. You don't have to.
Right.
Just because somebody wants you.
Client.
Yeah, you pick your client, right?
Yeah, we get to pick our clients.
Yeah.
And pick our causes and... that certainly is there. So we're talking about picking. You know, life goes on for the Democrats. It turns they have to pick a nominee.
Pick a nominee. Meanwhile, three of the candidates are going to have to stay in Congress for the next 2 weeks and not be on the campaign trail, right? And not only are they in Congress, they can't have their cell phones with them. I mean, they really have to be cut off. Bernie,
Elizabeth Warren,
and Amy.
Now, the fourth one that was going to be involved, Cory Booker, to no one's real surprise, he's out. He was going nowhere in this. He gave it a shot. So,
but you know, it's interesting about he's going nowhere. Why was he going nowhere? His whole campaign was based on unifying everybody. We can all be unified. Nobody wanted to be unified, it turned out. They didn't. That's why they didn't support him. Biden's campaign and Amy's campaign is the same campaign. Now, Amy Klobuchar is at 4%. Booker was at what, 2%?
Yeah.
So there's not much resonance here. And the support that Biden has is not so much a support for being unified, because his bedrock support is the older African-American population, which you can say is a support of gratitude for the Obama administration, not necessarily a demand for unification.
Yeah, well, but you take your support where you can get it.
No, I understand that. But in the great debate in the Democratic Party, there's really 2 points. 1 point, Bernie's point, which Elizabeth Warren sometimes seems to support, which says you've got to mobilize the liberal radical base. You got to mobilize the working class, speak to their needs and interests, get them to vote, get the young people to vote, and get workers to understand, working class people, people who live paycheck to paycheck, to understand that their immediate interests are at stake. And if you vote for the Democratic candidate, Bernie, in this case, you win. On the other hand, there's the Biden, Klobuchar, Booker approach, which says, and also Buttigieg approach, which says, no, unity, unity with the moderate Republicans. Biden goes so far as to say we can go back to normalcy before Trump. That's the debate in the Democratic Party. That's the split. Is it possible that there is a normalcy, normalness in American life that you can go back to? If Trump is the consequence of the development of American politics, then Trump is the norm, right? Well, there's nothing to go back to. That's what it evolved into.
Well,
it's like saying, I'll become 13 again. I'm not going back there.
Well, is it the new norm? The question is it a norm in style or is it a norm in substance?
Is there a difference with Trump?
With Trump, probably not. And that's where
the... Well, then with Trumpism, is there a difference? I don't think so. I don't think you can argue that.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
The question is, can Trumpism, will it ultimately survive? You know, you have these breakoffs from the Republican Party. We still don't know how strong they are.
They don't go anywhere. They break off and die. Who's broken off and lived?
Well,
Mitt Romney? No, I'm sorry, not Mitt Romney.
No.
There's no Romneyism.
As Canada, yeah. Well, part of the problem is there's no big funding behind that movement.
But why is there no big funding behind that movement? You know, I mean, I'm confident that if Mitt Romney wanted to raise money, he could raise money. Right?
Probably. But I guess the big money decides, well, we got the guy in office, we're going to keep what we have, because
he's doing a great job for the people who put him in office, for the guys who financed him.
Yeah, the tax cuts. And
they got nothing to complain about.
No.
So I don't see the argument that Biden makes and the others on that side make as being credible. There is nothing to go back to. This is what there is. The question is, how do you beat it? How do you suppress it, really? How do you make people realize that it's in their interest to make sure it doesn't rule, which it now does rule? And I don't see how you do it if you don't do something like what Bernie suggests, which is, you know, make the case. And in answer to the argument, how are you going to pay for it? The answer to me is, we'll pay for it. We'll figure out a way. That's not the issue. The issue is, should we do it?
Unfortunately, the way people are conditioned is that they They don't think that you can pay for it, and they don't. They think any ways of paying for it is going to hurt them rather than the ones that really should be paying for it.
That's right. I agree with you. That is an unfortunate way that this campaign has developed.
And it's been that way for years and years.
And by the way, the CNN, which Trump loves to accuse of being fake, CNN plays a role in advancing this Trumpist argument, because I take it that the argument, how you're going to pay for it, really is a Trumpist argument. It's something that strengthens the hands of the Trumpists. And in the debate, that was precisely what Wolf Blitzer and the woman, Abby Phillips, that's what they kept saying to Sanders. How are you going to pay for it? Or they said it to Warren. How are you going to pay for it?
Well, part of the fault, the way that they, especially Elizabeth Warren, rolled out her plans to pay for it, I think was flawed. I think that you have to point out how much what Trumpism is costing us,
yeah,
and how much you can save for that, and you have to keep the focus on that, number one. Number two, they talk about all these billions or trillions, hundreds of billions and trillions over the years. Don't put a 10-year number on it. That just increases the amount by tenfold.
That's right.
That increases the amount by tenfold. You can save a lot of money on drug expense, for instance, if you point out how much money the drug makers, CEOs are making, that kind of thing, rather than keep the focus on how much it's going to cost out of the pockets to pay for prescription drugs and things like that.
And more than that, as I don't know why they don't make this point, because the opposition says, oh, this is going to bring the level of indebtedness to what it was at World War II. The most expensive of the Medicare for all plans is Bernie's. And Bernie's plan costs a third over a 10-year period of what World War II cost in terms of the economy.
Real dumb, yeah.
A third. And we were able to pay for World – not only were we able to pay for World War II – the economy thrived as a result of World War II. It's what ended the recession. So yes, the whole argument is phony, to be honest with you.
Again, you're getting
just the same as the argument that Buttigieg makes when he says, "Oh, you shouldn't have free college for all." Bernie makes the point: college education should be a right. So this guy says, "No, you should pay for it." If you have to pay for it, it's not a right; it's an entitlement. It's going to get wiped out. When Social Security was enacted, and then the Social Security tax was imposed, somebody said to Franklin Roosevelt, "Why are you doing this tax? People don't like to pay taxes." And Roosevelt said, "If they're paying taxes, if I do it this way, it'll never be knocked out because it'll be a right. It won't be an entitlement."
There was something else, two things with regard to that, but something else. I saw an article this week, and I may have sent it to you. I think David Leonard in the New York Times, one of the things, the geniuses of FDR, is he made people see what they were getting for their money.
Right.
Rather than an abstract thing.
Good point.
So he didn't send people, they got a check from Social Security. They saw things that were there. His, when he did the TVA, people saw that they were building things.
That's right. And that's what I see, I'm afraid, David, is that we're coming to the end of our time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But
we'll come back to this. There's plenty here to talk about, but we'll do it next week.
We'll do it next week, and who knows what's going to happen next week. Meanwhile,
The trial will start in a couple of days, so we'll see.
Yeah, we have MLK Day, Martin Luther King Day.
That's right. Very important to talk about that. We haven't mentioned it. But we'll do it next week, so I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.